So I. Harry asked me to speak today, so I guess I'll just start. By the way, Susan, thanks for your note. This place is much more compact. I forget. In the old house, I was out on the porch. The computer was on the porch, so when I would walk, I would be in a different part of the house. Here, it's all very compacted. This is actually in the kitchen. If you turned around, you'd see the stove in the hall. Yeah, so thanks for letting me know that. The echo. But I forgot to click it so you didn't hear the clap to come back to your seats. You have to kind of remember these things. Thanks, Mary, for the chance to chat a little. This is going to be probably more scattered than usual. In a lot of ways. So I'm just going to jump in. I got a few notes that I kind of pulled together and some things. And, you know, when you first talked to me, I started thinking about some ideas. And that's all changed over the last few days. But at least to try to put some frame, I guess. So I've been doing these readings over the last month. All these different, it's a collection of essays by all these different teachers. It's called The Book of Mu that I got a hold of after doing some work with Sarah. Maybe you've seen it or not, but like Robert Aiken is one of the lead writers in there, and Jones got an essay in there, so does John Tarrant, and a lot of different old masters, so it goes all the way back, and it just brings all this, and it was just really good stuff. And in reading it, and different things, this is another thing that came up the other day, again, some of you may remember this one, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. Interestingly enough, that was like my introduction to Zen a long, long, long time ago. And it's it may or may not be a good introduction to Zen, quite frankly. It really kind of depends. I need to go back and read this again, I think. But I thought of it because I was having this one of the recent conversations with my wife. And she told me, you've always had these romantic illusions of our relationship, which is really true. And so I was trying to defend my sense of romantic, whatever, perception. And it made me remember of that. And I think it's pretty true. And that was pretty influential in a lot of my thinking, quite interesting. And I kind of thought about that. I also remembered it this week. I was finishing Terrence's book on The Light Inside the Darkness, which has kind of really gripped me. And not until it's been a really rough week. I've been reading, but I've been in a daze. And so at the very end of this, I kind of woke up and realized, well, there's some real depth here that I'm kind of skipping over. So I've kind of gone back and pulled it. But it also made me remember this whole, that whole romantic classical division that Prusik puts together in his whole thing, and how I got stuck in that. That kind of dual thinking a lot. And of course, a lot of what I have learned the last 4 years in growing here in this process is to try and, what? Not even transcend, to try and move through that dual thinking. You know, what's the saying? I don't remember the exact saying, but something like not two. You know, you probably are familiar with what I'm talking about, not one, not two, or not. Anyway, this idea of trying to hold that tension. I'm kind of very, very self-absorbed right now. And I'm very kind of feeling that self leaking. It's like through a colander or something. I don't know. I had planned to kind of focus my talk on the five remembrances of the Buddha. I did this once with Sarah. Sarah wasn't a big fan of the five remembrances, is what she told me. But my life is full of impermanence right now. And that's not just a theoretical idea. I lost my job in May, April. Found out in June that my wife is in love with somebody else. And I kind of knew that. And she's moving to Nashville in December. So we're in the middle of divorce. I fell and busted my foot, and so that's different. But yeah, there's other stuff going on. There's a whole there's a whole personality shift in my life and some other things that's all kind of tied in and out of that. We moved into this place in June, but we're not going to stay here because she's leaving and I can't stay. So I got to do all this over again. About several weeks ago, my brother-in-law, Ryan's brother, lives in California. He's got MS. His wife was his caretaker. You guys may have heard this last year. She fell, had a freak accident, and she's been kind of like semi-quadriplegic ever since. And she's kind of had brain damage and stuff, and she's been in an institution. Well, Leith wants to bring her home. And the only way the institution will let Leith bring her home is if Leith has someone living there with him to help take care of him. So, like the family, Ryan's sister, they know I've lost my job, so they ask if I would do it. At first, it's like, yeah, I don't want to do this. And then I had a conversation with Leith. And it's interesting because Leith and I are kind of like, on a political cultural scale, we're like this. It's like 180 degrees. But what so we had this conversation and I just heard this this sorrow and hurt and sadness in his voice, and it just resonated. And so, bottom line, and I've talked to Sarah and I've talked to a few other people, I've decided to probably do this. So I booked a flight to California. I'm going to fly to California, sit and talk with him, look the situation over, see how this looks, make a decision. So 2 weeks ago, Ryan and I were sitting and talking about this. Because what it did was flip the plans for here, because now I got to get rid of all this stuff. Sell our furniture, get rid of all the stuff. And interesting, by the way, for the reason I busted my foot is when we were moving, Ryan was throwing all this stuff away, and I got real angry. I think subconsciously I knew she was throwing stuff away to get rid of stuff, and I climbed up on the dumpster to dig something out and fell off. So there's a certain lesson there, too. And then last week, Ryan has a stroke. She's got a dissected carotid artery that flung plaque into her brain. And we ended up in Penrose for 5 days. And now she's home and she's got this incredibly terrible headache and she's seeing double. And so in the middle of all this, I get to play caretaker for a couple of months while I dissolve my marriage and my life here to go do whatever else. So I felt very much enmeshed in this whole mess of impermanence. You know, the five remembrances came very dear to me. I'm of the nature to grow old. Some of you know this. There's no way I can escape growing old. I'm of the nature to have ill health. There is no escape having ill health. I'm of the nature to die. There's no escape from it. But the fourth and fifth one really hit. There is no, all that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. And the last month, I've meditated on that a whole lot, trying to reconcile this, okay, you let go here, you kind of deal. You know, my wife, Ryan has a good point. I keep clinging to a past that existed a long time ago. So there's that tension. Well, I know better, but emotionally I do it. And then the last one, my actions are my only true belonging. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground on which I stand. And, you know, that actually gave me this sense of awe. Okay. I'll admit I was feeling very victimized by my school and my administration, and then, you know, kind of a bit victimized by my wife. And then realizing, you know, you've got a part in this. There's a lot of, this is, I don't want to be, flippant. This is genuinely karma. This is like consequences. This is cause and effect. This is how things roll. And I just kind of sat there and thought about that a whole lot. Not in a wallowing or pitying way, just like, oh, you did this, okay. There's this sense there. You know, I don't know. And then I also want to kind of, my morning meditation is focused on this, I take refuge in the way. And I've talked with Sarah a lot about this. I take refuge in the way. And for me, the way is multi-level, multifaceted. I have a lot of friends who tell me I do that. It's like, I mean, when I think of the Zen thread, my threads, there's like several threads that are kind of rolled together. Maybe they're most parts of a thread. I don't know. They're kind of fraying. Parts of them are fraying, it feels like. Part of my way, and a big part of my way, and I've mentioned this before, it's very Christocentric. I kind of come out of that. I always found it interesting that the early Christian idea was followers of the way. And so for me, that's always been a very central point. You know, I always thought of Christianity as a very Middle Eastern religion more than a way. And so that's me. That's just my stuff. And then this, of course, you know, and I'm very well aware as I think back of how much Buddhist ideology and Zen stuff has kind of been a part of this for a long, long time. And a lot of that was misconception. So what's been interesting the last 4 years, I've been sitting with the Sangha since 2017. And a lot of that has realigned what I thought, because what I came here thinking was a lot of misconception. I'm recovering. I've mentioned this before, so the whole big AA thing has a lot to do with the way. You know, I have this whole rock and roll hero baggage or lifestyle. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the Quadrophenia by The Who from the 70s. Yeah, what a great thing. The great, as far as I'm concerned, the great rock and roll romantic myth. There's a line in the beginning of it where Townsend says, I'm not schizophrenic, I'm bleeding quadrophenic. And I feel pretty quadrophenic. You know, it's like all these things. And I keep trying to pull them all together. You know, my AA sponsor says, well, you just need to do AA. You just need to get rid of, you know, my other kind of, my priest mentor is like, well, you just need to talk about Jesus, you know. And there are people probably, there are probably Buddhist people, well, you just need to focus on your Zen meditation. Well, you just need to focus on this. And there is this point, I was reading one of the things in the Book of Mu, where it said, and this was something else, I think maybe it was in Pema Chodron's book about doing one thing, not several. Well, good, bad, right or wrong, I'm in the middle of several. And I talked to Sarah about this, and she was like, well, maybe for you, these are all parts of how you line up refuge. And so I've been able to kind of see that as like, oh, these are the parts of my thread, or these are the threads that I think are a cord. I don't know. I had this thought while I was sitting here, right? I was doing physical therapy on my foot. Because it's still sore. And there's part, I tore a ligament and it still hurts. And my balance is off. So one of the things they have you do is on this balance board where you're sitting there and you're trying to balance. Well, I can't do that without falling. I can't hold that balance. You know, I have to hold a finger or a hand on the wall and I can turn loose and it'll do that. And then I just... I kind of feel like I can't hold that balance at all. And again, good, bad, right, or wrong. And I've used this before. I like this. This again. You know, I kind of live on the wave in the yin-yang symbol. You know, I'm very comfortable trying to balance on the wave, but I don't do it. I keep doing this, you know. And it's like, so, you know, is there something to hold to? Is there a ground of being? Is there, I don't know, you know, maybe if, It says they have me doing this exercise where I walk heel to toe, but you're supposed to keep your hands by your side, and I can't do it. If I put my hands out like this, I can. And so I don't know, is that it? Here? There? I kind of mixed this together and kind of, you know, just pulling these things. And so a lot of the reading and the things I do and I've been doing, I've been trying to find ways to kind of feed that. Terrence's book on the light on the inside again was really good. Kind of blew me away at the end, but not till the end. And I'm kind of back in it, trying to pull some things there. He has this line, honoring what is incomplete, we must love our lives and their details. And so I was sitting here a couple of days trying to go, how do I love my life with the details? Because the details right now really suck. You know, and so how do I sit there okay with this? One of my favorite meditation, whatever, pieces is that whole sense of the great way is not difficult if you don't pick and choose. Because I pick and choose. I've spent my life picking and choosing. You know, and picking and choosing has brought me here. Now, maybe it's okay to be here. Maybe this is what's next. And I've tried to kind of hold on to this is just what's next. You know, as opposed to seeing that at first, I got to say, you know, this is part of my evangelical upbringing baggage. It's like, okay, God, what did I do to piss you off? Because it seems like everything that's happened in the last 5 months has been like, let me see how much I can knock you. And part of it is just trying to go, you know, again, this is a point from Sarah. She, you know, how do you just look at this and go, well, okay, what is this? You know, what's next? And for a while, the what next was kind of okay, but I kind of now I'm tired of asking what's next, because every time I ask what's next seems to be, oh my God, really? Okay, so I don't want to know what's next. I just want to get to whatever. There's this other line I wrote down. This is again from Chandra's The Wisdom of No Escape. This is one of the books I got from Steve's pile. There was a couple of good readings in there when we had the little meet, when we met at the house, at Sarah's house several weeks ago. The everyday practice is simply to develop complete acceptance and openness to all situations, emotions, and people. By the way, what's interesting is that could have come straight out of the AA Big Book. I have an AA sponsor who just sits and tells me, you just need to accept what is. You know, you keep trying to realign everything. You keep trying to figure out what went wrong, what happened, how can I fix it? You can't fix it. You can't go back and do anything. It's done. You just need to, like, go on. You know? And it's like that seems to be this message that's there. Kind of across the board. It's like, okay. And I guess my point is, and I'll wrap up because I'm rambling on. I guess for me, what's strong and what's good about here, more than anything, is whatever that stable point to hold on to, that seems to be the practice. That seems to be it. Yeah, I've been meditating for a long time. I've been meditating for over 30 years. Different kinds and different stuff. And it probably is the only stable point in my life. And what's grown in the last 4 years has been this community, the Sangha. You know, I would like to say I take refuge in a awakening, but I'm not sure how awake I am. And I'm not sure I take a lot of refuge in group dasanga. I always stay on the edge of whatever group I'm in. Whether it's a sangha or AA or a church or this, it's like, you know, I'm one of those guys that kind of stays close to the door. Kind of right back in the back. I'm kind of in, but I know where the door is. You know, and my back's to the wall. But the practice itself, I take refuge in the way. And the way seems to be the refuge that holds. And I think this is the way. I think this is the core of that. And whatever that means, I don't know. I hope that makes some sense. And I appreciate the time. I'll shut up. Thanks. Thanks for letting me ramble. This is the beginning. I will just say this last little thing. I kind of have come to the understanding that a lot of my deal has to do with losing my center in AA, and that's really kind of kicking back up. And this particular talk today is the beginning of that movement. So thank you.